It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Well, welcome to Quantum number 29. And this week, where do we begin? I don't even know where to begin. Maybe let's start with the naked Brexit. And you can hardly believe this, but here is a woman who has been doing the rounds of the TV studios and has received a great deal of publicity, Dr. Victoria Bateman, who is arguing against Brexit by appearing naked with words written on her body.
We are inviting people to listen to our views, to listen to our opinions.
Indeed, to listen to our words and opinions, yes.
I myself am completely comfortable.
But you're inviting people to look at your body.
I am completely comfortable with my own body. I view women's bodies as one of the big battlegrounds that we face today.
And you've made that point, but you don't need to be. I mean, should the other Brexiteers themselves do the same? I mean, maybe
I would invite them to. I invite Jacob Rees-Mogg to do a naked debate with me, and we will see. We will get to the roots of this issue. The issue
you
being
really
that,
think that,
that Britain faces many, many problems.
The irony
right
is,
now,
of course, that she does this in order to talk about Brexit, and nobody talks about Brexit. They just talk about her naked body, and then she goes on talking about feminism and how no one's to be ashamed of the body and so on. But I do wonder, and she is quite an exhibitionist, I do wonder if any of her male students turned up in class naked with slogans across their body, whether she would be just quite so accepting. Anyway, for me, here, the real problem is this. She is a lecturer in economics at the University of Cambridge. I'm sorry, but that our students at one of our top universities are being taught by a woman who thinks that she can make an argument by appearing naked indicates something, and it's not something good, about the state of our higher education establishments. Well, we're not going to say anything more about Brexit today. We've got other things to cover this week, but let's go to Greece. And this, I suppose, is tied in a little bit with Greece, and it's concerning just a very interesting thing that goes on in Greece and elsewhere, but particularly in Greece since the financial crisis of 2007-2008, and that is that Greek citizenship is being sold off. In the wake of that financial crisis, the Greek government passed a law seeking to attract foreign investment. And you are granted a residence permit and, in effect, citizenship to anyone spending more than €250,000 on Greek real estate. By the way, that also gives you citizenship of the EU. And it does for your spouse, for your children, and also your parents. It's no wonder they call it the golden visa. They don't even have to live in Greece to qualify. Now, what this has done, it's had numerous impacts. First of all, it's put prices up and turned Athens into a multicultural shelter for the wealthy. It prices locals out of the market. It's just another example of the kind of society that we are creating, where the wealthy really get freedom of movement, but the poor can't, even if they could afford to. Now let's engage in a little bit of nostalgia for those of you who are a wee bit older, and for those of you who like the second greatest sport in the world, and that is football. And for my American friends, that's the real one, where we kick the ball, we don't pick it up. Here is a clip of one of the most famous football incidents.
Carlos Alberto, that's dangerous. Giardino, already left Cooper standing. Cavani! What a save! And that's the danger for England, split by a quick raid, and this the save of the World Cup. How it came back, even Gordon Banks won't know. Pure reaction, sheer brilliance by the world's number one goalkeeper.
That was Pelé, or rather Gordon Banks, saving from Pelé in the 1970 World Cup finals when England were playing Brazil. And it's just one of the most extraordinary things that you will see. Why do we play that today? Because this week Gordon Banks died, aged 81. He was typical of the working class footballer of that era. Coal miner's son. How many of them were coal miners? Somebody who body strength, he said, made him strong because of the work that he had to do. I just mention it because just a great sporting hero, even for a Scotsman who's just admired him, probably, oh, almost certainly the greatest goalie in the world. Let's move on to something perhaps a bit less cheerful. Well, Gordon Banks didn't have to worry at 81 about being euthanized, but it keeps coming back, and it keeps coming back. And once again, Lord Falconer was on the radio arguing for euthanasia. And what they always do, you'll notice that the same pattern is always followed. They take one particularly tragic case, and they talk about the distress involved of going to Switzerland, and they say, if only we could do that here.
There is a need for a change in the
law. Yes, and the Whaley's case was such a cruel case. He's got motor neurone disease. He had made arrangements to go to Dignitas, which gave him the security that as he got more and more disabled, he wouldn't lose his dignity, and he was bound to die from this disease, but it would mean that he could die at a time of his own choosing. Then an anonymous phone call was made to the social services. The police interviewed him, and the police interviewed his wife twice under caution. He worried that his control would then be lost. I can see absolutely no reason, subject to the protections for the vulnerable, that you shouldn't have that right when you are dying, as he plainly is. Having met Jeff Whaley and his wife and his daughter, who were incredibly impressive and heartbreaking, the idea that this was anything other than his own choice was absurd. And I thought the law was a total pig in relation to it.
Forgive me for interrupting. That, to be clear,
and
is what the law...
You have to have a heart of stone not to have some degree of sympathy with that. And if you've ever watched anyone suffer, and I have, it really is just extraordinarily painful, especially if you are one of the loved ones. But there are no easy choices here, and the idea of doctors killing people by giving them barbiturates, as the other spokesperson on that programme pointed out, is absolutely horrendous and something that we absolutely need to beware of and need to challenge. Now, it's interesting. This propaganda is pumped out again and again. I've heard three different BBC programmes this week advocating the same thing without really any refutation. And yet, when you get to discuss it and debate this, and I've done this in formal debates in universities and elsewhere, you find that a significant number of people, when they are given facts and when they are enabled to see the longer-term implications, they do change their minds. This battle is going to go on and on and on because our liberals think they have the absolute truth and that eventually we will catch up and eventually we will do what they say. They will use opinion polls and they will weight those opinion polls their direction, and then they'll put pressure on politicians and pressure on doctors. So far, it is the BMA who have stood out the most against this, and I hope that they will continue to do so. And I commend entirely those Christian doctors who have maintained not just the biblical standard, but actually the standard of civilized Western society. Okay, what's the point of a flag? You fly your flag over conquered territory. You know, in an ancient battle, you got your flag to go there. Those of us who've been watching Les Miserables on the BBC, we see when the flag is flying, the red flag is flying, or whatever, it's or the tricolour and so on. Well, what about the so-called LGBT flag, the rainbow flag? I personally don't accept its use in any sense whatsoever, because the rainbow belongs to God, but nonetheless, that is now how it's seen. And so we're now being told that we have to have LGBT History Month, and Glasgow City Council have got in trouble because they are not flying the LGBT flag above their council. I guess Edinburgh are boasting that they are doing it, and other town councils will, and to me, it is a symbol of domination. The Steeple Church in Dundee is flying the flag. Now, it's actually an evangelical church, part of the Church of Scotland. I'm assuming that the council are insisting that this is the case, but to me, I would just refuse it anyway. It is something that is imposed upon people. And we see that in different ways. I mean, there's just so many different things in terms of the kind of LGBT agenda. So let me just list one or two other things. The BBC have said that they want 8% of their stars and their presenters and so on to be LGBT, despite the fact that at most, the population is only 3% of that. Somebody quipped that, what, only 8%? The BBC are going to have to get rid of a lot of their stars and presenters. But why this disparity, and why focus on this one issue, and why not look for equal representation in other categories, as well as race, as well as disability, as well as sexuality? Why not insist on religion as being one? Why not insist on social class? That would absolutely decimate the BBC if they were to have social class as one of the categories. But in other news on the same lines, whilst the BBC may be insisting on being a voice for one group, one minority, it appears that our universities are not the same. Peter Hitchens has been banned from speaking at a university because of his supposed views on LGBT rights, and it's going to conflict with LGBT Rights History Month. Yeah. But I think possibly the most disturbing... Oh, by the way, not the most disturbing. Let's just go to the good old Ulster Unionists, who their youth group has decided that they want to campaign to ban gay therapy or gay conversion therapy. I wonder why they're doing that. And then perhaps more than perhaps, this is the most disturbing thing. The Scottish Government or the Scottish NHS are to make available IVF treatment for gay male couples. Now, why is that particularly disturbing? Because, I'm sorry for this basic lesson in biology, even in today's confused society, I would suggest that most of us are aware that men do not give birth, so it has to involve someone else. It has to involve a woman. They, in effect, have to hire a womb from somebody. So surrogacy is banned in this country, but now apparently it is to be legalized. What was that we were saying about the slippery slope? Mind you, in this battle, it's the church that's very often the first ones to lie down and surrender. There's an extraordinary letter being signed by several, how will we put it, leaders of religion or belief groups is how they put it, concerning the Department of Education's plans in England to teach, inverted commas, respect for LGBT people. Now, what they are arguing against is that independent schools should not be able to opt out of that. And of course, this is not about teaching respect. This is entirely about teaching the LGBT agenda. Because as a Christian, I would argue to teach respect for everybody, because all people are made in the image of God. But that does not mean that I want respect, if you like, for everyone's agenda, or for what we might term everyone's self-identity. And so in this rather wicked letter in which they are accusing those of us who do not agree with their view of sexuality and sex and gender of being responsible for bullying and many other things. Who's doing this? Well, Andrew Copson, Chief Executive of the Humanists UK. Wait a minute, the Humanists are a religious group? Andrew Copson's a militant atheist. Who's he allied with? Well, we've got Rabbi Laura Janner Klausner, Senior Rabbi to Reform Judaism. We've got the very Reverend Jeffrey John, Dean of St. Albans, which will come as no surprise to those who know him. Ian Green, the Chief Executive Officer of the Terence Higgins Trust. Who else do we have? Let me just scroll through this and tell you. We have the Reverend Canon Peter Leonard, Chair of One Body, One Faith. We have the Reverend Ian MacDonald of the United Reformed Church. Who else? Jane Ozan, what a surprise, Director of the Ozan Foundation. Someone called Hidayah of the LGBTQI plus Muslims. Some other rabbis, Simon Barrow, the Director of Ecclesia, the left-wing liberal, nominally Christian, supposedly think tank. Now, what are all these people doing? They're arguing for a particular ideology. It's not a Christian one. And they're arguing for it to be imposed on everyone. And they are arguing that there should be no exceptions to their point of view and their rules and their laws. Let's go back to that slippery slope and let's go to Australia, because they can slide as much as the rest of us. You guys in Australia who are listening to this, you probably know this story.
You all know we share a partner. So. We've been with Ben for 7 years now. That's He's a fraternal twin. What we love so much about Ben is he understands our bond. And to be honest, it's easy for us to share a partner.
It is so much easier for us.
We sleep in a king-size bed with our boyfriend. He's in the middle.
He'll kiss Anna goodnight. He'll kiss me goodnight. We sit there watching a film. He'll hold both our hands.
There's just no jealousy. We'll see. People won't think it's naturally, but we think it is.
I think this relationship is beautiful.
It is.
Our mum and friends accept it.
The twins, Anna and Lucy, who want to marry, they're identical twins, and they're both living with this man called Ben, and they both want to marry him. They say they're identical in absolutely everything. Since 2013, they've been living with Ben along with their mother. If they had kids, what would they be called? Cousins? Siblings? It really is. You know, people said, no, this won't happen. Going by the logic of our society, of course it will happen. And I tried not to, but we're going to have to mention some of the ubiquitous trans stuff that is absolutely everywhere. So, we have in Scotland the government being warned by some teachers and others that the LGBT guidance that's being put out, particularly on the T aspect of it, may actually breach the human rights of many children. Or we've got the bizarre situation whereby those who do Highland Games, and I, you know, there's so much could be said about this, but I won't, that they're being urged to have catch up with athletics, inverted commas, and allow women to compete as men or men to compete as women, which is far worse, or have a bisection. Highland Games, you're going to have men who say that they're women being able to wrestle or compete against women. I'm not even going to say mad. There's a whole new fuss about school toilets, and it's feminist groups in my city who are protesting about that and how it breaches, again, children's rights and women's rights. And then there's Baroness Featherstone of the Liberal Democrats, who has said that women who do not welcome trans women as, or is it trans men? Anyway, men who want to be women, who say that they're women. Women who do not welcome men who say that they're women are not welcome in the Liberal Democrats. So the agenda has completely taken over. But not just in them, I think in most political parties.
Well, thank you all for coming along here today to hear a little bit about Scotland and our human rights agenda. And thank you very much to you, Andrew, for facilitating this discussion. It's always a pleasure to be here at the United Nations. Andrew said,
Nicola Sturgeon, in her speech in New York, said that concern about transgenderism is misplaced. Now, I happen to think that Nicola Sturgeon is one of the most confused politicians around. She wants Scotland to be seen as progressive when it comes to gender identity. And yet, and she wants to be a feminist. And yet she just doesn't seem, she thinks that the feminists who are objecting to transgender identity, that somehow they're just confused, they don't really understand. I think she's the one who's confused. I've met with one of her government ministers who hasn't a clue what is going on here, and yet they are legislating for it. She said in this New York thing, one of the things I'm very proud of as First Minister was a country that has a very good record on LGBTI rights and has become the first country in the world to embed LGBTI education into the school curriculum. And she says that's grounded on respects for the rights of children and young people. Well, First Minister, what you are doing and what you are advocating is nothing less than state-sponsored child abuse, because you are confusing children and you are causing children to be harmed, and the consequences of that are going to go on for generations. God have mercy on you and on all of us. Oh, I forgot to mention it, but it's such a ridiculous story. The mother of age 38, who was arrested in front of her children and locked in a cell for 7 hours after calling a transgender woman a man on Twitter. This occurred in Hitchin in Hertfordshire. And it's 2 months since her arrest and she's not had her mobile phone or her laptop returned. I say that because today I was accused by somebody of misgendering them, and who knows what could happen. In the world in which we live, the police could knock on my door because I refuse to recognise that a man who says he's a woman actually really is a woman. And that, apparently, is a crime.
Please, stay where you are! Put your
knee, put your knee!
Knocked in first.
Please!
Maybe the priests should be investigating real crimes, though. Like the fact that 15 churches have in the past couple of weeks been threatened with firebombing. I remember, actually, that happened to us up in Burora. But, you know, I can't help but think if it was different groups, the police would be all over this and the newspapers would carry it headline as some kind of prevalent hate crime. But I've only seen this just one report on the BBC. There are letters which saying threats were made to that if the churches did not stop their services, they would be petrol bombed. That's real hate speech, and that's a real crime. But who knows, if they're attacked, maybe the National Union of Journalists will report on them as hate crimes, except the National Union of Journalists won't, because their Ethics Council has a code of conduct, and it says that prejudicial language or comments about people on the grounds of gender, ethnic origin, sexual orientation, age or disability is not acceptable among its members. What did it leave out? It's left out the bit about religion. Apparently, that is acceptable. And then finally, let's just come on to sad news but good news. We had Lindsay Brown from IFES, the International Fellowship of Evangelical Students, staying with us as he conducted a mission in the University of Dundee. And whilst he was here, he learned of the death of his friend Michael Green, who actually phoned him just the day before to say that he was going to be with the Lord. Well, Michael Green's a remarkable man, and we leave you with a little bit of a clip of him asking a great question. And I suggest that you click on the YouTube link and hear the answer to it.
When you look around the country, you find some churches absolutely bubbling with life, but large numbers of them seem to be asleep. And you say to yourself, if this gospel is good news, why on earth do so many churches do so little about it? And you know, I thought about this a bit, and I think there's probably three main reasons.
What stopped churches evangelizing? Fear, coldness, lack of knowledge on how to introduce people to Jesus Christ. Well, I'm going to leave you with a couple of quotes and encourage you again, if you want to support this podcast, you can go to the Podbean fundraiser and just contribute. Thanks to those of you who've done so. Kieran Turner, who works with Evangelical Alliance, in a tweet pointed this out. In New York City, a therapist can tell a man with gender dysphoria that he is a reincarnation of Napoleon, but not that he is a man. Just think about that one. And then, perhaps, let me give you just a little bit of feedback from somebody who, from the United States, who says this. This podcast and the web page and the blog as well presents important eye-opening news that you don't get readily here in the States, given with a Christian perspective. The podcasts are the perfect length for me to get in on my commute home. So unless you have a very long commute, I'd better stop. God bless you, and see you next week. We